the slogan.
Oh, because they... Good morning, colleagues and audience. I am opening the Wednesday, March 6, 2013 meeting of the House Committee on Higher Education and Workforce Development. Welcome. We have a couple of informational hearings, and we're going to have work sessions on two of the career school bills that have been in the works for the last week or so. And that will come after. What I'm going to open concurrent public hearings on House Bill 2727 and House Bill 2689. And it's my honor to call forth Representative Paul Holby. And before the representative begins, both of these bills have to do with the general topic of career technical education again. So we're continuing that theme that we spent a lot of time on Monday. Representative Holby is going to add an additional wrinkle to this picture. And before he begins, colleagues, let me tell you that the Senate version of House Bill 2110, that is the one authorizing the revitalization grant fund, that passed unanimously from Senate Ed yesterday. Unanimously and, according to them, enthusiastically. And so it's now on its way down to Ways and Means. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Paul Holby, State Representative, District 8, from Eugene, Bonita area. And thank you very much for having a hearing on House Bill 2727, which I'll speak to first before I get to House Bill 2689. House Bill 2727 is a bill that concept that I've been working on for several years. And it's really a pretty modest bill, I think, but it really has some great potential for exposing kids in high schools to some career technical education, specifically in the construction industry. The bill is really designed to produce partnerships with apprenticeship programs and our public schools, and trying to provide some opportunities for kids to have hands-on experience with some of the training facilities that are around the state that we have in the construction industry. Right now, our construction industry is a bit slow from the economy, but before this recession hit, and still to this day, we are facing a very serious workforce shortage, as many industries are. And the consequence of that going forward is when our economy does start to pick up, we're going to be really scrambling trying to find some skilled and trained workers in the construction industry. Not being able to achieve that is going to have some, I think, pretty severe consequences, financial consequences, for our public construction projects around the state in terms of getting a quality product, getting it done on time. And, you know, I think that this bill, though modest, has great potential for the future. House Bill 2727 takes $500 per million, and I think that percentage is a half of a tenth of a percent of public contracts, and puts it into a new fund that will be administered by the Apprenticeship Training Council through, you know, with the help of BOLI, to help award grants and award monies to different programs that have these partnerships with our apprenticeship programs. This bill is not meant to be a replacement for the CTE program that you all and we all have been working on. This is actually just a supplement to that. And the reason that it's specifically geared towards the construction industry is because the money's come out of construction projects, and the hope was that you know, that will generate the support from the entire industry, because they all recognize that we haven't been doing a really good job through our public education institutions, as you know, of having those vocational opportunities in school for kids to be exposed to. So I provided you some written testimony, and you know, I'm not going to read it to you, of course, but I will just say that the construction industry does make up a pretty large segment of our economy, and it's really important to our infrastructure, and it's very important to the future of Oregon's economy. There's a lot of jobs involved, and there's a lot of programs that we've tried to help along the way in the past, one of them being the ACE Academy in Portland, which many of you may be familiar with. And though it's not been able to qualify under the CTE grant programs to date, it is a program that is really, I think, worthy of some help. Because the apprenticeship programs can't afford to do this all by themselves. And these programs actually partner with our school districts and provide credit to the students who go through it. They provide some great hands-on math skills, drafting, and I will say there's some other programs that are popping up around the state. There's a program in the Lebanon area that's similar, and in the Eugene area, they're partnering with apprenticeship programs down there in our school districts, and they're all designed during the school time to be able to have kids go there a couple of days a week for a few hours a day, and they get credit for the things they learn. They have strict criteria. And in fact, the program in Eugene has developed a trade skills curriculum that has been approved by the Apprenticeship Council to count as credit towards apprenticeship entry. So these sort of partnerships are providing the shop class, if you will, in areas where we don't have shop classes. And I just turn this bill over to you and hope that you'll be able to support it. I know there are some that will not, you know, want to see any monies come out of their public contracts going up, you know, but really the idea behind this is that it's going to benefit our public sector agencies to have a skilled workforce in the future. Where is this workforce coming from? You know, our public contracting code actually, one of the purposes is to encourage apprenticeship and training in the industry skills. So I really ask, how do our contracting agencies accomplish that? This is one direct way to do that. And, you know, it's just so important that we look to the future, and I just hope you move this bill forward with a good recommendation.
Rep. Holby, before you go on to the next bill, colleagues, do you have any questions about this one? Let's do it that way, okay?
Sure.
Rep. Greenlee?
Thank you. It's almost a general question, Paul. You've been worrying about these issues for a long time. I've been worrying for the 10 years I've been here that the age of starting apprenticeship is somewhere between 25 and 28. We heard 28 the other day. Is this going to help get people into those apprenticeships earlier?
That I would say yes, you know, because we're going to get kids interested in showing them that there is a good future with good paying jobs with benefits available in this industry, and exposing kids to that, because right now they come out, they don't even know what apprenticeship is. And so my hopes is this bill actually will provide an FTE for in the apprenticeship division to help monitor and get these sorts of programs up and running, and to visit high schools and try to you know, have that sort of outreach, you know, and that I think by itself will get some kids who are very interested into these programs earlier. There are a lot of kids, as you know, that really learn a lot better with hands-on type of environment as opposed to sitting in a classroom with a book all day long. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I would say yes.
Let me jump in. Colleagues, I don't know how familiar you are with the ACE Academy and the model that Rep. Holby is talking about. You know, the ACE Academy is it's a charter school. It's a very unique thing. It's a charter school that's sponsored by four different school districts, Park Rose, Reynolds, Gresham-Barlow, and I think Centennial. And they meet at in space that's provided by the Carpenters Union at their training center. And students go to their home high school half the week, and they go to the ACE for the other half. So, you know, they do all the, they graduate twice, actually. And while they're at ACE, not only do they do, you know, learn the carpentry, engineering, et cetera, kinds of skills, but they're also doing math and writing, and it's applied to the projects that they're working on. And, you know, for some kids, it, you know, it turns what had been a moribund educational experience into, you know, real success. I was very impressed when I went to their graduation.
Right. And, Mr. Chair, if I may, there's other apprenticeship programs that also, not just the carpenters, but other apprenticeship programs that also participate in the ACE Academy as well. And the similar thing in the other programs I mentioned downstate, they are essentially a group of apprenticeship programs, and so kids have a chance to experience several different trades.
Mm-hmm. Well, Colby, could you say something about the Training Council? People may not be familiar with what that is and how it works.
So the Oregon Apprenticeship Training Council is a group that's oversees apprenticeship programs and works closely with the apprenticeship division in Boley to basically monitor the actual apprentices, the registered apprentices in these state-approved apprenticeship programs, to make sure that they're getting the proper education and the proper on-the-job hours to progress through apprenticeship. And most of them are generally about 4 years. And as they progress and pass those levels and get the on-the-job training hours, they then progress to a journeyman within that specific trade. And so the Apprenticeship Council is made up of industry management in the construction industry and also labor as well. So it's got both a representation on that council, which makes it a good fit for you know, having an industry decision and actually industry being able to help direct, you know, where these funds they think would be the most advantageous to be used in which program.
And the council includes both labor and management, doesn't it?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
And I should say, colleagues, I just noticed John Rakowitz in the audience. I neglected to say that the ACE Academy also gets a lot of support from industry and industry associations. It's a great partnership.
Right, and you know, Mr. Chair, I just, you know, the whole industry knows that we need more workers, and you know, I really think as a state, it serves everybody well to support a program like this, which I think is pretty. I'd like to see, you know, $1,000 per million, you know, but I'd be happy just to get $500 per million to go into this, and I think it benefits everybody.
Great. Rep. Gallegos.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Hovey, I'm just curious. I know that all of us are concerned about school cuts and school funding. And recently we know that a lot of the shop classes have been eliminated and so on. Can this be perceived as a supplement to that kind of deficit in our education system?
Thank you, Chair Dimbrough, Representative Gallegos. Yes, I think this is, and the nice thing about this is that it doesn't come out of the education budget.
Exactly, yes.
It is a new dedicated revenue source that does come out of public contracts, and $500 per million is not a lot, but, you know, if you figure, I think we have a projection that it's about $1 million a year statewide. So it could handle a few programs around the state, and you know, I think this is a great supplement. And the beauty of this is, as well, is these could be set up to be summer programs, you know, to really give kids something to do during the summer that will help them along in their education as well, but also give them, you know, something that potentially is enjoyable to do and a good look at a career.
Thank you. Rep. Parker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Paul, great program. I really like what you're trying to do here. You mentioned that this is not intended to replace but perhaps supplement the program operated out of Boley. Do you envision there being any kind of coordination between the two of them? Because there certainly could be some programs that would qualify, I would imagine, for either one of those things. It's a detail that I hope we get to work out.
Yeah. Yes, I think it is set up to be coordinated. The bill has coordination between BOLI and the Department of Education in the bill, which the CTE program also has that same coordination. So I wouldn't think that a particular program would be able to double dip out of both funds, you know, unless that was a conscious decision by the people who award those grants.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, Paul, I'm not sure the bill is clear on this, but does when would the money be paid? I mean, when would the money be transferred from the project to the training fund?
I think the bill does specify that. Let's see if I can find it for you.
As you're looking, I mean, what I'm thinking of is, you know,
it's when the contracts are awarded.
Are awarded?
Yeah. Yeah, from the contracting agencies.
Okay. I'm just thinking about a fairly sizable project that we just approved in this legislature over the last couple of weeks. That should provide some substantial funds to this, shouldn't it?
It depends on the timing of the award of that contract, I would guess, and there may need to be a clarification on a project like that is actually shared revenues from two different states, you know, so that points out a potential amendment to clarify that we would only be able to do this with Oregon share of that money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know if we can have the bill to get their money,
too. It's still a sizable chunk.
Any other questions on this one? Okay. Could you talk about the other one? Oh, before you do that. So I did want to mention that the bill says that this would go to construction and manufacturing or manufacturing programs, but that... You really want the focus of this to be on construction, don't you?
Mr. Chair, I think that's probably appropriate. You know, the money is coming from public construction contracts, and those trade-related skills are often very similar, but the bulk of the programs around this certainly will be the apprenticeship programs for the construction trade skills. In partnership with our public schools.
Thank you. Rick Johnson.
Is this the bill you're referring to that came through the Senate recently, or is it the next bill? You said the Senate enthusiastically.
No. That was the one that, you know, the appropriation to the CTE Revitalization Fund. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Great. Okay, you want to tell us about 2689?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2689 is another look at a vocational program that is in the state, and it's really designed to focus again on some activities, especially summer programs for kids and in some of the vocational programs. This basically came around when I was looking at the Northwest Youth Corps specifically and how that they have in the past really struggled to get any sort of help or funding, and yet they provide a huge summertime opportunities for kids to go out and do trail maintenance, stream maintenance, habitat restoration, invasive species work, a lot of these outdoor types of programs and camping areas, and really supplementing the work that we need to have done in some of our, you know, our outdoors, essentially, in some of our natural resource areas. This program is traditionally gotten money by contracting with the BLM and the Forest Service and getting money through Title II funds to help do some of this type of work. And as you know, with secure rural schools continuing to decline, their ability to get those types of contracts has really suffered. And this particular program serves students statewide. And it's some people think that it's associated with the OYCC as an at-risk youth program, but it is not. It is is open to students. They have to make application to get this, and they actually have, you know, get paid while they're doing this work, and it's a summertime job, essentially. And they also get credit with their public schools for these programs. And so it's another type of partnership that I just wanted to highlight. And though the bill may be written a little bit broad, I know we've got an amendment to try to narrow the scope of this type of program, and there's a piece of the bill that talks about their ability to partnership with education and hopefully be in line for, you know, one of these CTE awards if in fact it would ever get chosen. But certainly a more important part of the bill is basically to allow it to this type of program to contract with some of our public agencies to do some of this work that normally goes undone. And, you know, it's another great program that kids have really excelled in all sorts of different sciences, whether it's biology or whether it's, you know, trade skills or, you know, just work ethic. And, you know, it's really a great program where kids, it has really turned some kids' lives around. And I commend this bill to you. It's, you know, I think a really important piece. I know we have a Dash 1 amendment to help narrow this bill a little bit, making sure that this program, in terms of any sort of CT awards, is actually in partnership with a school district. So I mean, that was always our intent with this. And it's been difficult for this program because this type of program isn't defined in our statutes anywhere. And so they always run into roadblocks when they try to, you know, participate in any kind of public funding process. And we've tried to directly fund this through legislation before, and it's been very difficult to do. And so their primary focus is actually getting some contracts here and in there that are really predominantly outdoor type of programs like I've described. And I'd like to see them to be able to continue that kind of model to help them survive and carry on. So.
Great. And let me clarify the amendment. The initial drafting got it a little wrong. It suggested that an organization like the Youth Corps could apply directly for a CTE grant. But, you know, it's always been our intent that those grants are coming through school districts. The intent here is that, you know, an organization could partner with a school district or multiple school districts, since, as you'll hear, this organization, for example, takes kids from all over the state. So it could be a partnership with a consortium of school districts. So just to clarify that. Any questions about that? And you're going to hear directly from people who are working with, you know, the Northwest Youth Corps.
Mr. Chair, if I might add, if there are concerns about the scope of these bills and needing to have a little bit more clarity, you know, I know that you and I both were happy to take any sort of recommendations to make these bills more narrow. I just think it's really, really important to see if we can help these sorts of programs in the state of Oregon.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions of Rep. Holby? Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much,
Representative. Okay, well, before we get into the Youth Corps, let's, we have a couple of people who've signed up to speak to 2727. So I'll call up Rick Metzger, please, and John Rakowitz. John Molis from the Building Trades wanted to testify and indicate his support of 2727, but he has to be in another committee right now. Ilana, you didn't want to speak on his behalf, did you?
No.
Anyway, he just wanted to indicate his support. Mr. Metzger,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members of the committee, Rick Metzger, and I'm here today representing the Northwest Construction Alliance, which is the Labor Federation of the Carpenters and the International Union of Operating Engineers and the Northwest Regional Council of Carpenters. It'll be hard to follow the great eloquence of Representative Holvey. So what I think I will do, rather than be too repetitive, is to just increase the font size on a few of the comments that Representative Holvey made. I would say to you, number one, that 2727 is an education bill. And as you know, and as you struggle through this session, as you always do, realizing that over half of the state budget goes to education in some form or another, and how to adequately provide for the future generation and the contributors to our economy. You have before you, as Representative Holvey mentioned, a bill that would come actually out of a particular industry related to one-tenth of 1% to the education of the future construction workforce. It's a bill that, as he said, is modest, but it moves in the right direction, and it supports a specific industry that, frankly, all of you struggle in which to try and maintain with all the other needs that you have. And I recall very well in 2007 when the legislature created a $250 million addition to the state school fund, specifically targeted to special programs. One, I remember Roseburg used those dollars to help ramp up their construction trades. And of course, with the needs of the state budget and the pressures to have all the money in the general education fund, that lasted 1 year. And the programs go again. So here's an opportunity for industry to step forward and, hey, we know your pressures. We want to help contribute to that. Number two, the Apprenticeship Council, by administering these dollars, these grants, represents that spectrum of both management and labor, open shop and close shop. So you have an independent board to say, how can we best move the industry forward? And what you really do here is with the students that are involved, you're providing a conduit. These dollars have the option by a conduit to connect students who are not aware of and would like to participate in further education to those programs that already exist and that you don't have to pay for. And with the expertise of the Apprenticeship Council and, you know, working with BOLI can help identify those and provide those opportunities earlier. I think it's, while modest, it's an important step. I think it can do some very, very good things. You've got a great group of volunteers on the Apprenticeship Council who understand the industry and how those can be effective, and I would implore you to move that forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. John.
Good morning, Chair Dimbrough, members of the committee. My name is John Rakowitz. I'm with the Associated General Contractors, AGC, and we have a slightly different perspective on this bill. We felt it was important to go into the record this morning because my members, my industry, my association for that matter, recognize and actually financially support many of these programs, as the Chair recognized earlier when Representative Holvey was testifying on the ACE Academy in particular. Just to note, we in the last 5 years, despite the downturn, substantial cuts to our association. The association alone has contributed $1.2 million to ACE, Northwest College of Construction, et cetera. We don't claim anything special. We should be doing that. But it's just to show we understand what an apprenticeship system means to our future workforce. Having said all that, we are not able to support this bill this morning. And there's a couple of reasons for that. First and foremost, we have other priorities in this session related to the apprenticeship system. And our number one priority is we hope, a substantial expansion of the career technical education grant program that the Chair and others have been deeply involved in to fund that program at a level that begins to really make a much bigger impact across the state. You'll recall this program was established by the 2011 legislature. I believe it was unanimous, and there was $2 million put in that fund. Yesterday, on the Senate side, Senate Bill 498, I believe, passed out unanimously. There's a broad coalition supporting this, and frankly, our ask at this point, at least, is $20 million. So we want to be aggressive. We look at the number of asks you have in the session, and we've been working on this with a broad coalition. It supports not only our industry, but other industries, and that's why it has such broad support. So that's one reason. The second reason is, I don't know, I was got caught up in a little traffic up in the metro area, so I don't know if other bills were discussed, but there are at least three competing bills that I believe will come to this committee on apprenticeship utilization goals on public funded, particularly state funded, a phased in approach that works for the industry. I am hopeful after at least 4.5 sessions of the industry, both labor and management, wrestling with that issue, that we might be able to find a bill that everybody can support. We're working hard on that with Representative Holvey and, frankly, with the chair of this committee. It has to be done correctly so that it actually works for the industry. We are at an interesting period of time. It is important to note that right now we have massive numbers of every craft has massive numbers unemployed. So you want to start building programs, systems, and apprenticeship models that create the opportunities in the future, but not so much that you displace people who are still trying to earn a living, the long-time journeymen and women in our workforce. So finally, we have a couple of questions about the bill, and I'll be honest with you, we've been pretty overwhelmed by the number of bills, including one that just passed out of the Senate, House Bill 2800, taking up a lot of our time in the first few weeks. I have questions about the manufacturing element and how that would play with apprenticeship. I also have questions about Section 4, Subsection 2, having to do incentives, tax abatements, etc., would apply to this apprenticeship bill. I'm not sure what the intent or the purpose or actually the impact would be. So that's the second reason why we're just not able to support that bill, this bill this morning. Happy to try to answer any questions.
Yes, Mr. Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple. John, do you have any idea what kind of pot of money that we might be looking at? And I don't know that Representative Holvey said this, but on the $500 assessment model, what kind of money might we generate?
Yeah.
And I know economy and...
Chair Denbrough, Representative Huffman, I actually don't.
$1 million.
That's the figure he gave, and yeah. I have no reason to contradict that figure, but it's based upon the amount of public works, because this applies to every single public agency out there, little, small, big, every public works job out there. So I don't believe anybody actually calculates the total public works and to which this would apply. So it's difficult, I think impossible, at least for me. I don't have the answer to that question, other than I have no reason to contradict Representative Holvey's mm-hmm. estimate.
And the $1.2 million that your members had put into ACE and other programs, that's voluntary, I guess, and how is that assessed?
Chair Denbrough, Representative Huffman, we put about 25% of our annual budget. It's been shrinking, like everybody else, pretty dramatically. It's membership dues. That's how we collect them. And then as a board, we make investments in staff. We make investments in all kinds of things. About 25% of our annual revenues as an association, we dedicate to these types of programs because they're so important to us. And it includes not only ACE, but we're a founding member of ACE. We helped create the ACE program. We consider it to be a model not only in the state but across the country, and others, Northwest College of Construction, there are any number of programs that we support on a regular basis. So it has nothing to do. It's private money collected from our members that we, in turn, our board decides to dedicate to these kinds of programs.
And your members work both with public projects and private projects?
Oh, certainly, yes. I would just point out, we're hoping that the private side will pick up here sooner or later and that there'll be a lot more work for all of us. And then we will need the people and the pipelines we're talking about today to fill those very skilled crafts.
Thanks, John. Rep. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Rakowitz, if this bill would go through, would your members have strong feelings about the timing of the payment, let's say, of the stipend or the fee, whether it's best on the front end of the contract or the back end? I think right now the bill stipulates at a point of awarding the contract. That's when your $500 per million is due. Would that be something that would stir much angst, or would it not create a lot of work?
Chair Dimbrough, Representative Johnson, frankly, that's kind of the question. We don't really, we haven't yet sorted our way through how this would all work, so I don't know the answer to that. We just have questions about how it would work, how it fits with the system. We are really interested in investing in model programs and systems, and that's why we have the priorities we have. These other priorities that I mentioned, we've been wrestling with these things for multiple sessions. We really like to get some of these pieces in place.
Any other questions? Yes, Rick Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good idea, you know, reinforcing the importance of apprenticeship. But in this particular scheme, what would keep somebody making a bid from just putting that in their bid and upping their bid? Wouldn't it be kind of...
The taxpayers are paying for it.
Wouldn't it be kind of naive for us to think that they wouldn't?
Either of you want to address that speculation?
Well, I think when anyone, when bids on a contract and they look at the total cost and what they're going to be able to do with that, and what their cost will be. However, if you look at that in the competitive environment, everyone would be playing off that same expense, as diminutive as it is.
Just a follow-up. Mm-hmm. I agree with that, but we established the fund, and it sounds... like a positive in its theory, but it just simply, in my view, could very well just jack up the price of all contracts. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, Rep. Greenleaf.
It seems so such a small amount. I mean, on a $100 million contract, you'd be looking at $5,000. I mean, that gets lost every day in a contract like that. It may not be worth doing, you know, subsidizing, but the financial piece seems to need to be tiny.
50,000, right? Would it be 50,000 for a
100 times 500? Yeah, 5,000.
Yeah, but still, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it is a relatively small amount per project. I think your point, Rip Gilliam, is looked at collectively for, you know, the taxpayers' expenditure over a year, it could be substantial. Yes.
Mr. Chair, I had the honor of serving in the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., and President Carter, to encourage people to carpool, started charging us to park at the Pentagon. He found out to collect the money cost more than he was taking in, and people want to carpool. I see the same thing here. All we're doing is it's going to cost us more to collect it, and we're collecting from the taxpayers to do this.
Mm-hmm. Representative Denver, just one final comment, if I might. I think, first of all, it's important to put things in perspective in terms of the cost and look at that. Number two, in terms of payment of the contract, I don't see that as a administrative nightmare at all. And then number three, as Mitchell Rakowitz mentioned on some of the apprenticeship bills that are coming forward, and we are working together because it is in the best interest of everyone, I think it's important to look at where this fits because you talk about apprenticeship programs and getting people trained and on the job for a future workforce. This bill, as I mentioned before, is more of the conduit to find young people who want to learn how to access those types of programs. And I know most of you have been through various training centers, and I was at one at IBEW a few years ago, talking to nine young people there. Four of them were college graduates. and they were now in the apprenticeship program because they went through all everything else, have this huge debt, and realize, hey, I had no idea this was here. So a program like this can help help reach out to these type of folks to get them into the programs that we will further work on to try and strengthen and provide those opportunities. And I think you need to look at this as an educational conduit to reach out and to get to people, to show them what's available, and to help support that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. So, colleagues, I'm going to be putting in an amendment request to deal with that, the manufacturing question. If there are any other amendments that you'd like me to put in at that time, just let me know, and we'll see if we want to send this down to Ways and Means. If we do agree that this with this concept, send it down to Ways and Means, where it will, of course, compete with other bills that are there on this same general topic.
Mr. Yes. Chair, as the witnesses have testified, I mean, I support the apprenticeship program, but I mean, and why are we going to send so many down in the Ways and Means process? I don't think that's appreciated. So why don't we pick the winner of the best one and send down and not? And I think the witnesses all testify that we have an ongoing program, but we want to pay for this. Pay for it directly. Don't pay for it through a fee to the builder.
Yeah.
It's a shell game.
I was trying to get the multiplication right. It seems to me, if we're talking about $1 million here, we're talking about $2 billion in state construction contracts. Does that seem people to be in the ballpark?
No, I haven't figured.
It's beyond me. Yeah. Representative. Yeah. Don't know.
I don't know.
50,000 here. 50,000.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Have to divide the millions. For million.
Okay. Let's bring up our witnesses on House Bill 2689. And so I'll call up first of all Jeff Parker and Tom Helmer, please.
Does that not make sense? I mean. Of course, you know, pick a winner, don't you?
Yeah.
And all this is doing is taking tax money if you're paying for the contract.
Yeah.
Contractor's not paying.
Thanks. Chair Denbrough and members of the committee, my name is Jeff Parker. I'm the Executive Director at Northwest Youth Corps, and it's an honor to be here today in support of House Bill 2689. I want to just briefly provide some context into how 2689 will help organizations like Northwest Youth Corps enhance partnerships with local government to do two things. One, serve more Oregon youth, and two, enhance our public lands. And I'm going to do that just by providing a little bit of information about Northwest Youth Corps and how we operate, if I can operate this machine. There we go. Northwest Youth Corps' core purpose is to provide opportunities for youth and young adults to learn, grow, and experience success. We do that in a variety of ways. One, we focus on education, and that's both in the classroom, which you see on the left-hand side, and in the field on the right-hand side. We have a real value of challenge, and that's both the physical challenge of doing the hard conservation work and also the emotional and spiritual challenge of taking a snow hike for your first time, a transformative experience for young adults age 14 to 19 years old. We also focus on community. For a lot of our participants, it's their first experience in working in a team, developing teamwork skills, understanding that you have to work together to accomplish a task. And finally, we really focus on leadership with the young people that come to our program. We want to graduate young people that are better prepared to experience the challenge to find success in the challenges that they're going to face, whether they're academic, whether they're entering the workforce, or whether they're just challenges that their community faces. A little bit about our history. We started in 1984. Our founder had a history working with the YCC programs and the YACC programs of the 70s and 80s, and those were federal top-down programs that lost their funding. The organization is a private nonprofit, and it's grounded in a belief that young people have a lot of potential and can add a lot to our public lands and can grow and develop themselves while they turn out a quality product. The first few years of our organization, we worked primarily with the forest products industry. So we would do post-timber harvest mitigation. Over the course of the last 29 years, we've had sustained growth, not only in the amount of partners that we work with, but also in the geographic area we work and in the capacity of types of jobs that we can take on. We have three main program areas. Our Youth Corps program is our flagship program. That's one that most people are familiar with on this committee. It's the residential program. It's open enrollment. Anyone can apply. It's for young people 14 to 19 years old. And, you know, essentially young people show up on a Saturday and we take them out in the woods for 5 weeks. And we teach them the work ethic that it takes to get the conservation work done. We teach them the teamwork principles that are required to be successful. We expose them to leadership opportunities. They walk away with a paycheck, they walk away with academic credit, and unbeknownst to them when they signed up, they walk away with having experienced an amazing adventure and some lasting lifelong friendships. Our Outdoor Oregon program is a very similar model, except it's non-residential. It's a Monday through Friday, and the young people sleep at their homes. Again, it's open enrollment. It connects local youth to their local resources. And it was developed following feedback we got from this body 3 years ago about providing opportunities for a non-residential experience, local youth working on local projects. We started the program 4 years ago. Right now we're operating in 9 different communities, primarily up and down the I-5 corridor, although we do have a project in Coos Bay, and we do have a program in Klamath Falls. Right now it's a summer-only program. Our hope is to turn that into a year-round program by 2014. The same outcomes for the participants, though. They learn the work. They develop the basic job skills, the teamwork. They also earn the academic credit, a credit and a quarter of high school, public high school. And they also are exposed to outdoor recreation. Our job, we feel like, is to graduate young people that have an appreciation for the natural resources of the state of Oregon, that know how to know how hard it is to preserve and protect them, and also enhance their ability to be successful as they leave the program. In Eugene, at our headquarters, we have an accredited high school. It's an accredited alternative high school. We work in partnership with 9 different public school districts. We have freshmen through senior classes. And our model is to take what we learn in the classroom and then apply it in the field. So there's 1 week in the classroom followed by a week in the field. And that's not just project-based learning, service learning projects, but we're doing social science, we're doing literature, we're doing math and science in the field, in addition to doing conservation work about 1 day of every field week. Students earn a diploma. Not a modified diploma, but a real high school diploma. And really what we're trying to do is connect young people there to educational pathways and career pathways that they didn't know existed. Right now we talk about the retirement bubble in the trades. We also have a retirement bubble coming up in our resource management agencies. Statistics show in the next 5 years about 40% of the BLM is going to retire, and that's 60,000 federal employees. Somebody needs to be there who's interested in resource management and wants to pursue academically and professionally those jobs. The number of youth we serve from Oregon, we do have open enrollment. We serve young people all over the Northwest, but in the last last year, we served just shy of 700 Oregon teens, and again, those are ages 14 to 19 years old. And so those are teens that are not only earning academic credit, those are teens that were putting money in their pocket, they're taking back to their rural communities. Last year, we wrote $1.4 million in payroll to students and our young adult staff members. And we've seen that grow progressively from 1990, just about 180, all the way up to 2012. We'd like to see that grow into the future. Here's where some of our youth come from. This is a look at the last 10 years. You'll see it's heavily weighted on the west side of the state. That's where our population density is largest. Also in Lane County, I want to point out that we do some programming out of our headquarters that we don't do anywhere else in the state. That's why those numbers are pretty heavily inflated, the 2,600. But exactly where you would expect our participants to be coming from. This next graphic is a list of all the work projects that we've done in the last 3 years in the state of Oregon. Every one of those blue dots represents 432 person hours of work. Most of them are residential, meaning they're a very remote setting. Our crews go in, they stay for the week, they work about 7.5 hours a day, and then they do an hour of education. Then they get to experience the joy of cooking for the team, taking care of camp, getting to bed early, and then waking up at daybreak to start over the next day. During the weekends, we go and experience recreational opportunities throughout the state. Sure. When we think about youth outcomes, our organization is firmly grounded in the youth participant themselves. We really want to see them be successful. We're talking about their achievement of a high school diploma through our outdoor high school. We're talking about helping them be college ready so they can see success both at the community college level and at a four-year institution. We're trying to get them prepared for apprenticeship programs. Many of them, we're trying to get them ready to go straight into the workforce. And those basic job skills are what we hear from private industry that many of their young applicants are lacking. The work ethic, the teamwork, the understanding that you have to show up prepared and ready for the work, for the job site. And then again, I had mentioned the career pathway opportunities are going to open up in resource management. We get young people who had no idea that what was out in the great outdoors, and they're very excited about it. And it's neat to see that happen and change their academic pursuit and also where their occupation is going to take them. Some of the outcomes we look at, we survey all of our young people, and 96% of them talk about the critical elements as being excellent or good after they complete one of our programs. And we're talking about those job site competencies, finding a job, working cooperatively, being dependable, taking responsibility. We also took part in a Texas A&M study this year, which we just got the results at 5 o'clock yesterday, showing a 27% increase in our young, in our graduates in areas of leadership skills and community involvement above a control group of the same aged participants. I didn't get that in the slide because, like I said, I just got it last night. We focus on the youth, but some of the outcomes that are really important to us is the workforce development. So right now, youth unemployment for ages 18 to 24 hovers somewhere around 20%. And, you know, the seasonally adjusted unemployment rate for the state of Oregon yesterday was announced at 8.2. So it's a pretty staggering increase for the demographic of young people that are trying to enter the workforce. Last summer, only one in four young people between the ages of 16 and 19 had summer work. And I think that most of us in this room probably had summer work, critical summer work opportunities when we were a young person. It helped develop who we are and the work ethic that we bring to our jobs today. We're really interested in preparing those young people to enter the workforce. We want them to be successful. We want them to learn the skills that they need to not only get the job, but hang on to the job. When we think about community development, the work that we do is really critical, high-priority restoration projects, streamside restoration, trail maintenance, trail construction, invasive weed eradication. We're talking about developing the next generation of stewards who are going to care for our public lands. We're trying to leave an indelible thumbprint on them that says our public lands are important to us, and the way that we get them cared for is by sweating, is by bending over and doing the work that it takes. We see increased access to recreational and tourist activities in the rural communities that we work at. That's an economic engine for many of the areas that we work. It brings in tourist dollars. And we also see the improved lands and waters of our state. From an education perspective, we focus on project-based learning, and our classroom is the outdoors. We want young people to learn, but we want them to apply it on the ground. And that's a big difference from the way that we're educating a lot of our students. And there are a certain cross-section of students that that's the only way they can learn. They are kinesthetic learners. They need to be outdoors. They can't be in a classroom for 7.5 hours a day and get the information. Our accredited high school is graduating seniors with a real diploma, and our summer field program has an accredited curriculum as well. Each participant sits through an hour, participates in an hour of education each day, and they earn a credit and a quarter of high school credit at the end of their successful completion. And we talked about the career pathway opportunity. Young people are exposed to park rangers, resource managers, and others that they didn't even know there were career opportunities. Northwest Youth Corps is not unlike other nonprofits in the state that are doing this type of work. 62% of our operating budget comes from the fee-for-service projects that we can do. Those are primarily our federal partners, BLM, Forest Service, National Park Service. We get a lot of grant and donation support. We have some public school contracts and some small tuition and fees. But what carries the day for us is the fee-for-service work that we can do. When we look at what we've done over the last 29 years, we've had over 16,000 young people through our program. We put $1.4 million in wages into people's pockets last year. Our goal is to have an opportunity for every Oregon teen that wants one. Last year, for 1,000 positions, we had 2,000 applicants. What it takes to keep us moving forward is our community partners, not only our fee-for-service partners, but the foundations that support us, the individual donors that support us, private industry that supports us. Again, though, the importance of that fee-for-service work, that 62% of our operating budget is what helps us keep gas in the vans, keep food on the table, and keep young people working and earning a living stipend. And so this brings me full circle to how House Bill 2689 will increase opportunities. What we notice in our non-residential program, which was called Outdoor Oregon, we started 3 years ago, is we no longer can partner with our federal partners, typically, because commute time from our urban meeting spots to BLM property or Forest Service property is prohibitive. We're not going to drive for an hour and a half to work for three to turn on to drive for an hour and a half. So it's put us in a position where we're looking at cities, counties, local government, watershed councils, PUDs, you name it, to create those fee-for-service contracts. What's limiting for us is we are an academic program. We don't have an employer-employee relationship with our participants. And so when we go to the city of Portland, the city of Eugene, city of, you know, insert here, we can't contract with them because we don't meet their procurement standards because we're not an employer. And contrary to what Representative Hovey said, we work under a cooperative work agreement with our federal partners, not a contract relationship. And the cooperative work agreement is the authority that we have in the Public Lands Corps Act, which gives us the ability to non-competitively partner with our federal land management agencies in the interest of improving outcomes for youth and in the interest of the resource management outcomes that we're achieving on the ground. What we're trying to do with House Bill 2689 is establish that same authority at the state level so that we can have positions for those other 1,000 young people that we had to turn away last year. We can do that with our non-residential programming, which is a real growth area for us. We see a lot of popularity and a lot of applicants in there. We would love to be able to have those partnerships to help that make that real. Thank you.
Great.
Anybody have any quick questions, or we can go on? Yes, Rick Greenlick.
I'm not sure what open enrollment means when you talk about having 2,000 applicants for 1,000 slots. What do you mean by open enrollment?
Sure. Chair Dembro and Representative Greenlick, when we say open enrollment, we mean oftentimes programs like ours are misinterpreted as adjudicated programs or programs for troubled kids. And so our program, is, when we say open enrollment, we mean anyone can apply. And that's one of the beauties of our program is we'll get a demographic cross-section of kids that would never cross paths with each other, and then all of a sudden they're on the same team and having to work together. Yeah, anyone is eligible.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, so just following up on that, so how do you decide which 1,000 to let in? Is it first come, first served, or how do you make those decisions?
Yeah, Chair Dembro, it is essentially first come, first serve. We have our programs are wildly popular with youth who have been through it the prior year. So the only spot that we do put limits on is returning alumni. Our philosophy is that we'd rather provide that opportunity for someone who hasn't had it, and so we hold back returners until the end. But they are important contributors to the crew. So we have a couple of them on each crew.
Great, thanks.
Sure.
Yes, Robert Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For these students who participate and then go on to apply to colleges or universities, do you supply them with letters of recommendation, or you know, help them in that process, or somehow allow them to reference the fact that they participated? And do you have any evidence that maybe that has been helpful for students in that process?
Chair Dembro and Representative Johnson, we do. So at the end of a five-week stint, a young person gets a number of things. They get the paycheck. They get a clean T-shirt with the logo on it. But they also get a certificate of completion. And, you know, it's a diploma-looking document. And so they take that with them. It's a great thing to put in a job application or a college application. We also have a four-person recruitment team. And all winter long, they're fielding calls and providing recommendations for young people. So we, as a youth program, we do a lot of paperwork in the field. You know, we're functioning and as in a parental capacity, so we have a lot of reports. And so each participant has a file with a very comprehensive four-page evaluation and a follow-up evaluation that's both scored and narrative. And so anyone can pull that file out and provide a recommendation for that young person. This is how they did. They've got notices of exemplary performance, you know, whatever it is. And we spend a lot of time doing that in the wintertime.
Great. Thank you.
Great. Okay. Jeff, would you like to?
To my left is Tom Helmer, our program director of our Outdoor Oregon program, and he came up just to answer questions if we had questions about the non-residential program. So,
okay. Any further questions of these two?
I do have one question.
Yes,
so
of course, sir.
You're working on the urban sorts of things. Do you have any connection to, like, the public parks in Portland and things where they have some of the natural areas rather than the manicured parks, like Forest Park, for instance?
Chair Dimbrough, Representative Gorsuch, right now we don't. We do a little work with the Forest Park Conservancy. Mm-hmm. That's more or less in-kind work the last couple years. So we'll go out for a day or two and do a little work. We do not have any project work with the City of Portland right now, and mainly because we find it very challenging. We can't contract with the City of Portland.
This is
a prime example why this bill should pass. So,
right.
So we have the same issues in Eugene, in Salem. Seems like the larger cities we work with, we find it harder to work with them with the contracting issues. Some of the smaller ones will bring us on if we're below their threshold of instead of being a contractor, we can be just come out for a few days and work with them. So,
okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Dimbrough, if I could add, from the conceptual formulation of this bill, we were very careful to spend time with public employees, the building trades, and many other unions to make sure that there were protections, that there wasn't any displacement or replacement of permanent or seasonal employees. And, you know, those contract and procurement requirements are there for a purpose, and we're not trying to circumvent that. Really what we're trying to do is accomplish work that is not getting done for small dollars,
right.
But we're on the outside looking in because we don't have the legal vehicle to do it.
And so I wasn't implying that. What I was implying is that there's lots of work to be done in places like Forest Park, and I would think too with the metro green spaces where there's a lot of dam material and the chances for wildfire are pretty high. So I was taking the other approach, which is there should be lots of work for these kids to do.
Yeah, great. Thank you. And thanks for that clarification, Jeff. Okay, I'm going to call up some students now, if that's okay. Tom, if you don't mind stepping down. I'll call up Tanner Graham and Hayden Brown.
CRC, what is it? The National Certificate of Readiness to Work.
Oh.
That we put in a bill to the farm to issue it.
It's an idea. Some very pretty young. Okay, who wants to go first?
First, thank you, Chairman Dimbrough and members of the committee. My name is Hayden Brown, and I'm a student at the Northwest Youth Corps Outdoor School and a graduate of the Northwest Youth Corps Summer Conservation Program. I would like to begin by saying how immensely the Northwest Youth Corps program has improved not only my everyday life, but my high school career and the possibilities for my future. It's not only about the social maturation, but it incorporates the development of skills like teamwork and real-life problem solving, and it really encourages the evolution of a solid work ethic. For example, in most situations, a group of 16 to 20-year-olds being supervised by 25 to 30-year-olds sounds a little frightening, but at NYC, we create a productive and educated youth through difficult character-building tasks and relevant education. Aside from personal growth, the NYC program encourages young people to look forward to the future and to think about careers that will stimulate further growth and legitimate sense of purpose. Chairman Dimbrough, thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Hayden. And say something about yourself. What are you a high school student now?
Yeah, I'm a senior at the outdoor school.
Okay, great. And what are you thinking of doing next?
I'm doing the woofing program in New Zealand. Next year.
Not everyone here knows what that program is, I would wager.
It's willing workers on organic farms. So it's basically like you get to stay and be fed anywhere in the world pretty much as long as you work on like an organic farm.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, Tanner.
Thank you, Chairman Dimbrough, members of the committee. My name is Tanner Graham. I am as well a senior at the Outdoor High School and a graduate of three NYC programs. I first joined the Northwest Youth Corps team in 2011 when I decided to do a summer program in Idaho. I knew little about the program or what I was in for, but I soon found myself learning new things about the environment, teamwork, and most importantly, myself. I learned about leadership and how to work and live with other teens from a variety of different backgrounds. I learned how to think more methodically and rationally in my judgment, in my regards to my own personal work ethic, communication, safety, and desired outcomes. This has helped me to become an all-around better person as well. The character traits I developed through the NYC summer programs led me to the decision to become part of the Northwest Youth Corps Outdoor High School. I made this decision based on my desires to continue growing my knowledge of conservation work and for my enjoyment of hands-on learning. The Outdoor High School has intrigued me because of its smaller class sizes, lower student-to-teacher ratios, and how connected the school is to the outdoors compared to that of public schools. Each week, the teachers provide a consistent curriculum for providing students with the credits needed in order to graduate from high school. The innovative curriculum used at the outdoor school allows teachers to connect field study, work projects, and real-world knowledge to our everyday lives. Every other week, each class does a service learning project with the outdoor school in order to jumpstart us into the working world. I'm excited about future projects because they will provide me with new challenges to overcome. The school, along with the service learning projects, provides me with new experiences, discussions, critical thinking skills, and an education. My time at the outdoor school will soon come to an end, but I feel that I am ready for the real world, as the school has provided me with workplace knowledge and career readiness, which I will in turn use to fulfill my future goal of becoming a United States Forest Ranger. Thank you, Chairman Jimbrough and members of the committee, for your time.
Thank you very much, Tanner. So what are you doing next year?
This is harsh, you know. This is all these kids here in senior year of high school. What are you doing? We give it to them here, too.
It's
like you're a teacher.
I believe I might go to Arizona, where there's a program called CREC, which is a conservation program similar to NYC. Or I might go to Lane Community College in Eugene.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Colleagues, any questions, please, gentlemen?
Mr. Chairman, but
yes, Representative.
Before Jeff leaves, and thank you, students, and good luck in your future. Sounds exciting. Jeff, behind the chairs here, we're talking. Instead of a T-shirt, could you give these youth a national certificate of work readiness?
Career readiness.
Career readiness certificate. Are you familiar with that?
Chair Dembrough and Representative Wisnett, we are working towards that, and we're actually working in partnership with Lane Community College to create a resource management program that would be a cohort program that we could have our graduates go to.
Why not both?
Yeah. I think it could be both. Yeah. That's an excellent thing.
I mean the T-shirt.
Yes.
Do many of the kids end up in the military as a logical next step in their career path?
Chair Dembrough and Representative Greenlick, I would say, and this is just kind of off the cuff, I would say probably 8 or 9% do, and that's really a little bit of conjecture on my part. It's just the young people that keep in touch with us. So one of the challenges for us is really funding that post-program evaluation and post-program tracking. We do it semi-formally right now. I would love to have a formal program where we can really track impact and outcomes in a 5-year post-program study. We just don't have the firepower.
That would be good. Well, you're right next to the U of O. You should get somebody to take it on as a project.
Yeah,
that's what I thought.
Great. Yes, sir, of course, sir.
Just a comment. You both did a very fine job, and your presentation is very impressive for folks who have not probably had a lot of experience in public speaking. So nicely done.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, both of you. We have one more panel, Mike Straub and Mary Chamness.
Hello, Chair Dembrough and committee members. Thank you for letting us speak today. My name is Mary Chamness, and I'm a 1986 alumni from Northwest Youth Corps. I was lucky enough to find out about Northwest Youth Corps when I was a junior in high school. I signed up for their first summer program and enjoyed it so much, I immediately turned around and signed up for their second summer school program that same summer. Following that, I went to Oregon State University. While I was at Oregon State University, the job experience I received at Northwest Youth Corps helped me obtain a job with the Oregon Forest Service fighting forest fires in the summertime, so I was able to help supplement my college income. And And it was the skills I learned at NYC that prepared me for that job at the Forest Service. I enjoyed it immensely. Following my graduation from the university, I worked for 9 years in an educational facility, and now I'm currently working as a forest owner and forest manager of several forest properties here in the Willamette Valley. Northwest Youth Corps also helped prepare me for this as well. There's many benefits to working as a youth in the outdoors. You learn the love of nature, you learn the love of hard work, and the self-fulfillment you get from having accomplished that hard work yourself. These are skills that many of the teenage youth in current society are not being exposed to. As a current forest owner, I'm recognizing that many of the people that are currently in the forest professionals and the forest owners are becoming older and aging, and we're not having much of an influx of a newer population coming to take over these jobs. That's a concern that we have today, and it's something that I'm hoping that continuation of the NYC program will help fulfill that role, will help continue to expose teenagers to the joys of the outdoors, to the accomplishments you can achieve through working hard and success you feel in that, and exposing them to some job opportunities they might not otherwise know about so that they might continue and pursue those jobs as they become older. Those were the primary things I wanted to share with you today. I'd be happy to ask any questions.
Okay, why don't we hear from Mr. Straub first, and then we'll see if we have questions. Okay. Thank you very much, Mary.
Hi, I'm Mike Straub from Eugene, and I happen to be Mary's father. after Mary went through the program, the only negative thing we found is she was so self-confident and such a leader that she was a little hard to live with. But we were so impressed with what she got out of Northwest Youth Corps that the following four children of ours all went through it. We had nephews and foster kids, and the state even encouraged us to have some teenage foster kids go through the program. And I think it's real important. There used to be a lot of jobs outside for kids, and there just aren't anymore. And Northwest Youth Corps and programs like it is really about the only opportunity for these kids to get jobs other than, say, at McDonald's or indoors, and I think that's very important. And we were so impressed that I kept asking questions of the leadership in Northwest Youth Corps, and finally they said, why don't you just join our board? So I was on, and I helped them in locating a permanent home for their headquarters, and then we've remodeled it, and the program's been growing. The one thing I think is really sad is we turn away about 800 or 1,000 kids every summer that would like to work and need this experience, and we need more access to jobs where we can put them to work. So I think this House bill would be very helpful in solving that problem.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions for this panel? Okay, thank you very much for coming down for your perspective. Thank you. Okay, we have, is there anyone else that wanted to speak to the Northwest Youth Corps bill? Scott, actually, I was going to call you up I think you're going to speak to the other bill, but please do.
For the records, Scott Winkles, representing the League of Oregon Cities. My note, I think I may have given you the wrong bill.
No, oh, you wanted to speak to this bill.
This bill, my apologies.
Great.
Sorry, I was held up in the same traffic that led Mr. Rockowitz. League of Oregon Cities is supportive of this legislation. We have a number of cities that would like to partner with NYC. The contracting code doesn't allow sufficient flexibility for us to do that as efficiently as we would like now. We're talking about some projects that probably would not get done or would be significantly delayed if without an organization such as NYC to help us out with those.
Great.
Additionally, cities are also going to be experiencing a massive number of layoffs in the next decade, decade and a half. And so exposing young people to...
Retirements, I hope.
Retirements, yes. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's my first testimony today. I'm not quite warmed up. We will have several retirements, massive number of retirements in the near future. So exposing young people to municipal work and understand that these are good career fields is certainly something we would regard as beneficial. So we're happy to support the bill.
Thank you very much, Ms. Winkles. And in your reading of the bill, it it looks right. It seems to do what is intended.
Yeah. Chair Denbrough, yes, it appears to be well constructed and should do what is intended.
Okay, great. Okay. Any questions, Ms. Winkles? Okay, thank you very much, Scott.
Sure.
Okay. Colleagues, we'll take one last closer look at the bill, and you know, if it looks as if it's ready to go, probably bring it to you for a work session. Please let me know if you have any concerns with the bill or any suggestions for amendments. So with that, I will close the public hearings on House Bill 2727 and 2689, and I will open a work session on House Bill 2187. Okay. So, colleagues, you remember that there were some amendments that were needed for a couple of the career school bills, and we think the parties have reached consensus on them. Matthew, do you want to come forward to answer any questions there might be?
Good morning, Chair Denbrough, members of the committee, Matthew Barber, compliance specialist and team lead of the Private Career Schools Licensing Unit at the Oregon Department of Education.
Great, Matt. So why don't we focus on 2187? So what do these amendments do and what problems have they reconciled?
Chair Denbrough, House Bill 2187 was proposed to create a process by which the Department of Education could transfer oversight of a school which was subject to joint oversight with the department and another state agency, such as maybe Oregon State Board of Nursing or the real estate agency, and transfer the school to that agency, and then create a process by which that receiving agency could then perhaps transfer the school back. After consulting with the Oregon Healthcare Association and the Northwest Career Colleges Federation, as well as the Oregon State Board of Nursing, we have amended House Bill 2187 and the -3 amendments. It's somewhat of a gut and stuff. It takes out the original text of the bill and replaces it. The first thing it does is it amends the ORS 345.015, which is the list of educational institutions that are exempt from career school licensure. First thing it does is in subsection 2, it makes clear that institutions that provide training to business employees or association members, and that training is primarily for the organization's membership, that training is exempt. This responds to concerns raised by the Oregon Healthcare Association because they offer professional training, continuing education programs for certified nursing assistants, certified medication aides, things like that. And while people employed in those roles do come to those trainings, people from out of state might come to those trainings. People who are not employed as CNAs might come to those trainings because they're interested in a career as a CNA or they're receiving training. So this helps clarifies that individuals and entities like the Healthcare Association that provide those trainings, if they're primarily for the membership, but non-members may attend, those trainings are exempt from career school licensure. The other thing it does is, if you turn to page 2, it creates a new subsection 7. This exempts from career school licensure courses, instruction, or training offered to prepare students to become certified as a nursing assistant or medication aides when the training is in compliance with standards prescribed by the state nursing board. So those programs, if they're offered in compliance with the nursing board standards would be exempt from career school licensure. And this would be a particular benefit to nursing homes, residential living facilities, which often offer these training programs to employees. And then those employees will have their tuition covered by the federal Medicare program, so they're protected in that way. But that, again, this also addresses concerns that were raised by the Oregon Healthcare Association. The bill, the Dash Tree amendments do maintain one element from House Bill 2187's initial version, and that's the clarification of how the superintendent of public instruction goes about making a determination that a school is adequately regulated by other means. And it just clarifies that after making the determination, the superintendent grants the exemption. So that's what we're doing in the bill. And, of course, the Dash 3s, like the initial language of House Bill 2187, is double amended because the Career Schools Licensing Program is transitioning from the Department of Ed to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission on July 1st of this year. Mm-hmm. So this addresses the program as it's currently housed with the Department of Ed, as well as once it transfers over to the commission.
Thank you very much, Mr. Barber. Anybody have any questions about these amendments? Rep. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, just clarification in the bill summary. It refers to allowing the superintendent of public instruction to be the determiner and so forth. Who would that person be?
The governor.
Seriously, we have a chief education officer, Rob Saxon, I think, is the assistant superintendent of public instruction. But is there a particular person in view here, or just whoever heads up the Department of Ed at this given time would fill that role?
Matt, I can give my conjecture, but as an insider, who do you think is your boss?
Chair Dembo, Representative Johnson, I think it was in the last session or maybe the session before that, the governor was made superintendent of public instruction, and then the position of deputy superintendent of public instruction was created at the Oregon Department of Education. That's the role that is currently being headed by Mr. Saxton. In statute, there's a provision that I believe it's in statute. It's also in our administrative rules that provides that references to the superintendent of public instruction can also be read as references to the deputy superintendent, so that the deputy superintendent would be able to exercise this discretion.
Yes. Okay. But again, that would presumably change after July 1st of the next year.
Correct, Chair Dembro, because after the program transfers to the commission is not overseen by the deputy superintendent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thanks for that clarification, Matt.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I'm slightly confused by this amendment that I'm trying to make sense of. The purpose is to exclude those classes that are taught by hospitals and other from the purview. Is that the intention of this amendment, or to include them?
Chair Dembro, Representative Greenlick, what we have in statute presently at ORS 345.015 is a list of certain types of instruction that are exempt from the career school laws in Chapter 345, and those would also be exempt from licensing. This adds to that list a new subsection of courses that would be exempt, and it's specifically directed towards certified nursing assistant or certified medication aid programs that are offered in compliance with standards prescribed by the nursing board.
That's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure that.
Right. But those programs would still have to comply with the standards by the state nursing board. And a few years ago, we had worked with the nursing board, and they have adopted standards for these programs that are very similar to the minimum standards we have established. So they do provide for student protections.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, great. I do see representatives of the Healthcare Association and the Federation in the back, and they seem to be nodding in the affirmative, which means they seem not unhappy with what we're doing here. So that's good. Rep. Wiseman.
Mr. Barber, I really thank your organization. You provide a lot of economy. I'm not against you here or anything, but my question to you, I heard about this amendment coming. Did we check with NFIB or AOI? Are there other things out there that we want to exempt or have a program? I don't want to be a roadblock here, but...
Chair Dembo, Representative Wisnett, the only entity we have heard from asking for something like this was the nursing board. And we haven't had conversations with AOI or anyone else about something like this.
Okay, I think we're ready for a motion. Vice Chair Huffman.
Chair Dimbrough, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated March 1st, 2013.
Vice Chair Huffman moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated 3-1-13. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to our adopting these amendments? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted. Rep. Huffman.
Chair Dimbrough, I move House Bill 2187 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Hold on just a second. Who did the consent agenda? Is this one?
Yeah. Yeah.
I wouldn't because
I've
had so much discussion.
Okay. Rep. Huffman moves House Bill 2187 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, any objection? Okay, House Bill 2187, as amended, passes. Who would like to carry this one? Okay, seeing no one, I will carry it. Okay. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2187, and I will open a work session on House Bill 2191. And this is the agent bill, right? Okay, Ben, could you tell us about the amendments?
Chair Dimbrough, the initial draft of House Bill 21 amended the definition for the term agent, as that term is used in ORS Chapter 345. The initial language of the bill established that not only could employees of a school be serve as agents, but also individuals who are working under contract. It also established a third category of individuals who could be considered agents, and those were individuals working at the request of the school or under contract to provide technological services. This was to address what we're starting to see with individual career schools hiring technology service providers to act as agents on the internet and online. The bill also made related amendments to ORS 345.070 to get that statute's use of agent in line with the new definition that was proposed. After consulting with the Oregon Healthcare Association and the Northwest Career Colleges Federation to discuss their concerns related to the definition, we have got the Dash 4s now. And what the Dash 4s do is, again, it's a gut and stuff. It replaces the original language of House Bill 2191 and instead creates a new definition for agent. The Dash 4s would create a definition for agent that makes clear that agent means an individual who is both employed by a career school or working on behalf of the school under contract for the purpose of actively procuring students or recruiting students for the school. And because this definition in this change to the definition in ORS 345.010 would not require an amendment to 345.070, we've removed the references and the amendments to 345.070. So that's one of the changes that the Dash amendments have made.
Great. Okay, I think this really does clarify things very effectively. I appreciate that. Any questions for Mr. Barber on this one? Yes, Rep. Parker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The modification in Section 1 in the Dash 4 amendment leaves out what was subsection B, which was the section that treated IT. Mm-hmm. Are you feeling that it is completely encompassed in what is now just Section 1 without any subsections?
Representative Dimbrough, Vice Chair Harker, yes. We do believe that this gets into it. This was one of the results of our conversation with the Healthcare Association and with the Career Colleges Federation. The Healthcare Association, one of the things they do is they provide a curriculum content for use at certified nursing assistant programs, and then they list on their website the institutions that use that curriculum. They were concerned that they might be brought in as an agent. We haven't regulated curriculum content providers before as agents, but by specifying, one, that the person has to be actively procuring students that address their concerns, and then by including contractors, we believe we would be able to get in those individuals who are providing technology services, because they would be working under contract for the purpose of actively procuring students.
Right. Okay. And just to remind you, the need for this legislation, we want to make sure that students who are being solicited are being, the message that's going out is fair and honest and accurate. And if it's not, then somebody has to be held responsible. And so it becomes clear that if someone is acting as an agent to recruit students, they are representing the school, and the school is responsible to make sure that they're being truthful and, in their representations of the school. There was a problem with that, and this corrects that problem. Is that a fair assessment?
It is, Chair Dembrough. In statute and in our administrative rules, we have standards that agents representing career schools must comply with, and one of those being that they cannot misrepresent a program. They have to provide honest and accurate information to students and potential students. Also, unfortunately, the way the definition of the term agent is in current statute, it only applies to employees of a school. It doesn't apply to contractors. So an unscrupulous school, one of the few that we have, could potentially get around this by just having a contractor provide agent services, and we wouldn't be able to go after that individual if they were providing inaccurate information.
And again, most schools are scrupulous, right?
Yes, yes. Chair Dembrough.
Yeah. Rep. Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I missed this in the other testimony, pardon me, and we haven't gotten stuff, so maybe it just brought this to my mind. Are we going to, does this apply to anybody but for-profit, I guess we're talking about here, schools, correct? Or are we talking about all institutions of higher education?
Well, they would be covered by a separate statute, right? I'm not sure how this issue is addressed by them.
Because I think of adult programs that have been sort of farmed out to third parties to attract students at traditional institutions, whether they be private or public. And would this have some relevance to those as well? And if so, mm-hmm. as you mentioned in the bill, I don't think it is.
I would say not. Mr. Barber, you might address that. I mean, this is dealing with a very narrow kind of situation.
Chair Dembrough, Representative Gilliam, this is addressing a very narrow issue. This is amending the term as it's used in ORS Chapter 345, which only applies to career schools. It wouldn't, and career schools are for-profit institutions of higher ed, but they are certificate granting, which means that's the highest award they can confer on a student. For-profit degree granting institutions that are regulated by the Office of Degree Authorization, those schools and their admissions personnel would need to comply with whatever standards are adopted by ODA. If either a career school or a degree granting school belong to an accrediting association, a voluntary accrediting association, and that accrediting association had any requirements that applied to admission personnel, those schools that are members of the association would need to comply with the association's requirements. And if the institutions were approved for any financial aid programs offered through the federal government, like Title IV under the Higher Education Act or veterans benefits, they would need to comply with whatever requirements those federal programs established.
Okay, a quick follow-up mm-hmm. then?
Yes, please.
So, if you will, are you saying that those requirements, whatever they may be for those institutions that are degree granting and so forth, are, roughly speaking, under the same standard that we're establishing here? Those admissions folks there have to meet these standards?
Chair Dembrough, Representative Gilliam, I am not sufficiently familiar with ODA's standards for admissions personnel or standards for admission personnel established by the U.S. Department of Education or any accrediting association. I could not speak on that. But just from what we've seen, this does seem to be in line with what others are doing. But you might want to look up that if you need it.
Yeah, it sounds like you've given us a further task with Gillian, but I think you raise a very good point. You know, if we agree that these are correct standards, we do want to make sure that, you know, they apply to other entities as well. So that's something we can look into. Okay, any further questions for Mr. Barber on this? Yes, Rep. Parker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know that it's really a question for Mr. Barber, but in thinking through how this came to us and the role of technology in here, I'm not sure who is actively procuring students, and I'm not sure who is responsible under a contract issued by an agency to a, or by a school district, or I'm sorry, by a school, one of these entities, to a web design and production organization. I don't know who in that chain is responsible under this.
Matt. Chair Dembo, Vice Chair Harker. Under this situation, the career school is, under our statutes and administrative rules, responsible for making sure that its agents are acting in accordance with the laws and rules applicable to agents. And then, of course, agents are to comply with those. So the school would have an obligation to make sure its contractor, who was providing an online agent service, was complying with the applicable rules.
Is the owner of the business that receives the contract responsible? Is the employee of the business who does the web development work responsible?
That's not specifically addressed in the -4 amendments. That might be something that would have to be addressed in the contract between the school and the contractor. From the licensing unit's perspective, we may not know who the individual employee of the contractor is, but we would know who the contractor is, and that's who we would contact first with concerns.
So it's being the contract.
But ultimately, the responsibility is with the school. Correct?
That is correct, Chair Dembo.
And that's what this is seeking to do. The question of, you know, who the school should complain to in terms of the service, that's between them and the school. But for the purpose here, we want to make sure that, you know, that the school is taking on the responsibility of its services being accurately represented.
You know. Okay.
Does that answer it?
I think I can go with it.
Okay, Rep. Huffman.
Chair Dembo, I move to adopt the -4 amendments dated March 4th, 2013.
Okay, Vice Chair Huffman moves to adopt the -4 amendments dated March 4th, 2013. Any further discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to adopting these amendments? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted. Buffman.
Chair Dembo, I move House Bill 2191 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Rep. Huffman moves House Bill 2191 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Rep. Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Generally, I'm for honesty and accuracy. Just wanted to put that on the record. But I get the feeling that this bill's not quite ready for prime time, so I'm going to be a no, and I'll leave it at that.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion? All right, Brett Parker.
I will be a yes with the understanding that it is our intent that the school is the responsible agent, that it is not something that gets pushed down through contract to, for instance, a web developer working for a company that's building a site for a school.
I do believe the intention of this legislation is the reverse of that. Yes. Any further discussion? Okay. Cassie, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Gallegos?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
No.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative Greenwood?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Representative
Wisman? Aye.
Vice Chair Harper?
Yes.
Vice Chair Hoffman?
Yes.
Chair
Denver? Aye. The motion passes.
You get the flag.
See no hands being raised. I'll carry this one as well.
I have my flag.
Okay, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2191. And colleagues, we're adjourned. Okay.